it's been a technical difficulty kind of day. As you can see, we're both laughing already because it's been one of those days. But welcome back to the Runge Turners podcast, the show that's about improving the life, well-being, and productivity of mechanics everywhere. I am your host, Joshua Taylor, the founder of WrenchTurners.online. And on today's episode, we have a very special guest. It is Madison Wheeler. Now, there is a interesting leapfrog story that goes along with Madison, and I'm looking forward to her sharing that with you all. Not to mention that we get to have our third female mechanic on the show, which is super awesome because it's incredibly hard to find you because like 96.5% of mechanics are men. This like finding unicorns out in the wild. So without further ado, let's get into it. So Madison, thank you very much for taking the time and getting through the absolute wonderfulness that is technology to try and be here this evening.
Can't live without it, but can't live with it.
Yeah, my statement was things techie things that aren't techieing are the definition of stress. So we've gotten through that. So Now that we're here, let's kick off this with our first question. Like, what's the one thing that got you into automotive industry? What got you into being a mechanic?
It's funny because I have no one in my family that is mechanical at all. Like, my dad comes to me, he's like, help me. But honestly, it was growing up in a small town, like a small town Cochrane, went to Cochrane High, and there was maybe like 200 kids in the school. Most of them all came out from Cremona or wherever, all drove trucks that were handed down from grandpa, right? So they're all classics at this point. And that's honestly probably what got me hooked was trucks. I was like, I like these trucks, like pretty cool, pretty fun to drive, put big tires, big wheels, you know? But I didn't want to be a mechanic for a very long time. I actually wanted to open my own bar, like worked in the bar industries for 8-9 years and then had a big dream to open my own bar. And then it just kind of like didn't want to live the server lifestyle, you know, like late nights all the time. And, you know, it wasn't a normal routine. So I was kind of thinking, you know, I got to do something that's still normal Monday, Friday, you know, live in life kind of thing. But I'm not a desk person. There's no way I could sit at a desk and sit there and all day and do
that. Should be self-identified as somebody who wants to open a bar. You want to be kind of your own boss to some degree, but you are definitely outside of the normal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Once I realized I didn't want to work till 5 a.m. all the time, I was like, what's something else I can do? And I actually started heavy duty first. Worked at a waste management company, apprenticing on like Hydrovax and tanker trucks.
Okay.
Loved it, but man, I was sore. And some of those wrenches I'm holding are like the size of my forearm, you know? So it's like, like how long can I do this for? So eventually it was like, well, you know, I like heavy duty. I liked working on those massive trucks. So then just shrink that down a little bit.
A little bit. Scale the corner down just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So you're working on a heavy truck. So did you end up with like, is the first experience in automotive at a dealership or was it?
It was, yes. So I actually took pre-employment for my first year because I was a little bit nervous about finding a job, being a female in the trade and having no experience whatsoever in automotive. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of thinking, you know, looked into pre-employment and they actually place you into a dealership within your like second or third week of school.
Mm-hmm.
So I got placed at Cochrane Toyota and then I got hired on there once I was finished school.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So did you find that the schooling, the pre-employment, the schooling was very beneficial, partially beneficial, or was it more beneficial from the fact that they like almost immediately placed you in a facility?
Yeah. Like I would say the only beneficial part of that was that I had a job the day after school was done. But it was, you learn the exact same thing. It's just 3 weeks more extended. So you're learning it at a slower pace. And some of it was like, it's like, what's this? Like a screwdriver, you know? And it's just like, you had to, it was very like basic, but it was almost okay. Cause there were some kids in there who had no idea what a screwdriver was. So, you know, if you're starting from green, then perfect.
Yeah. Some of that stuff is really, really weird because I don't remember my first, now I don't, I, I only remember bits and bobs because it was a long time ago from my first first year, you know, automotive apprenticeship. But a year and a half ago, I did the year one motorcycle training at college. And part of the course, or part of the first course, was literally identifying tools. We're talking identify the difference between a number one and a number three star screwdriver, like, and the fact that there's multiple different ways. It's just some of the stuff just make like head tilt. Like,
yeah, what? You're like, ooh, what? Should you be doing this if you don't know what that is?
Yeah, right. But I guess it's from a liability standpoint, they want to make sure that somebody somewhere has taught this person that this screwdriver and this is a way and this is the way. You know what I mean? Like, so, right. So the quality of the individual, if they can't pass courses like that, is a great way to weed out some of the folks that can't be in our trade. So you know, your first dealership was at a Toyota store.
Yes.
So what was that first year like?
It wasn't a lot of mechanical, to be honest. It was a lot of cleaning up. And went out the journeyman and, you know, like I'd put on a tire here and there, a couple lug nuts here and there, but they had, it was a busy shop. Like they had 16 techs and it was like the most profitable Toyota in Canada at that time. So obviously as a first year apprentice with very little experience, they're not going to be like, here, you know, touch all these cars and put our name in the sand, you know? So they started me off very green and it was kind of nice. Like, I worked underneath another apprentice. He was a second year and he like, without him, I probably wouldn't have stayed at the trade. He was awesome. He, you know, he's just one of those guys who took his time and, you know, even if he was getting in shit for taking extra time, he's like, I don't care. So it was really nice. But other than that, like it wasn't a very hands-on experience to learn first year for sure.
No, it was a lot of getting coffee or doing the shuttle or cleaning out drains or taking out the garbage
balls.
Or
whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Been there, did that. So once you got through that, did you stay at the Toyota store for a long period of time and really grow through Toyota or?
I did not actually. Unfortunately, COVID happened at the same time basically as my first year ended. So I'd registered to go for school a second year and that was the point when everything was shutting down. It was like no school, everything's online. Basically half our techs got laid off because, you know, we had no one coming in anymore because there was no one driving. And so, I would say like for the first like 8 months, I was laid off for 8 months from Toyota, during the pandemic. And then they offered me the job back, but I had a different job offer at a Nissan dealership that had just opened. And the foreman that was at Toyota was now at Nissan. So I was like, well, you know, I'm going to follow my foreman, I think, because I really liked him. He was awesome. Then started at Nissan right after that.
Is that Richard?
No, that was Steve Lee.
Steve Lee.
Yes.
So where along the way, now this is trying to make that leapfrog and to tie you and how I know to need to reach out to you is where did you meet Richard Mueller?
So he was the foreman at Nissan. So my foreman from Toyota was just like the basically underneath Richard.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He didn't
want
the responsibilities of the foreman anymore, but he still wanted to, you know, work in the shop, be very hands on and help the apprentices out. So sorry. Richard was my foreman when I started at Nissan.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So that's okay, so you've had a bit of time working on heavy duty. You've got basically a full year of pushing brooms. And now the pandemic has ended and you're now back in a shop at a Nissan store.
Yes.
That's probably not as big as a Toyota store that you left.
Oh, my God, nope.
It's two completely different worlds. Like many of there's a lot more Nissan stores in that size where they're, you know, anywhere from 3 to 8-ish.
Yeah.
You know, especially in Canada. But Toyota stores on average are like 10 plus minimum.
Yes, always.
And you know, I've worked at a smaller Toyota store, but now that I've had the opportunities that I've had to speak with who I've spoken to in the last 2 years, there's really big Toyota stores, like really big Toyota stores.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, even the Honda, so there's lots of big Honda stores. And, but the biggest is obviously, you know, big three, you know, speaking specifically a couple of weeks ago, we aired, I have no idea when this is going to air. So contextualize a couple of weeks ago for me recording it. Ed Roberts at Bozard Ford with 362 people in the dealership, like the you know, 117 of them, if I'm not mistaken, are in service alone, right? Going from what you and I are used to here in Canada, like 10, maybe eight technicians,
like,
you know,
I had
16
four store. At Nissan.
Right. 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 Big, big difference there. So what was your experience there? So now that you've made the move and you're now presumably you're starting to really learn and you're starting to grow mechanically and so on and so forth at a Nissan store. What would be your take on the difference between working the two import brands? Like basically the two biggest import brands, two of the three biggest, like Honda would be the last of those three in my personal opinion. But now that you've worked at Toyota store and now you're working at a Nissan store, what would you say is the largest difference between the two?
I would honestly say just like the engineering and manufacturing difference between Toyota and Nissan. Like they're both very well engineered, but to do like rear brakes on the little kicks, so simple, like nothing, no mechanical, no electronic brakes, you know, it was just very simple. And I found like at Toyota, it's not just take a caliper off, slap pads on, put it back. You know, it's way more in depth than that. And every service we did at Toyota was way more in depth as well, just because it's the brand of the name, you know, that's how we do it at Toyota. And yeah, Nissan, like very different learning pace for sure, I would say, like compared to Toyota and Nissan.
Okay. Okay. And now with that said, does that mean your experience at Nissan, would you say your learning was significantly expedited because of that, because a lot more things were more simple, at least in your view?
Yeah, definitely. Like at Toyota, I understand why they don't want you touching things your first, second year. Like it's a whole machine you're learning about, right? And Toyotas are very in depth, like each one's different, but I found a lot of Nissans, like they related, you know, like, oh, this happened on a Pathfinder and working on a Murano. It's kind of the same issues that we're dealing with, and they'd be a lot of the same problems, you know? So yeah, it was quite expedited because you see one issue, okay, well, this car has the same issue, but it's the exact same fix.
Okay, you know? Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I've never worked specifically at a Nissan brand before, but I've worked on them before, but not enough to associate that this and this and this and this in different models of the same year or roughly the same year to associate that similar. But I did find I won't necessarily say that Dodges are as well engineered as Toyotas or Nissan, but at the same time, there's so many model differences. There's so many different models at the time. You know, the last time I turned a professional wrench on a Mopar would have been 2010.
Oh, wow.
Professionally. So in 2010, 2011, 2012, somewhere in there, you know, there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of models, a lot of variations, a lot of everything. And I think that's one of the things that the import brands maybe do a little bit better.
Yeah.
In the fact that they make fewer options for guests to choose, which makes it a lot simpler in manufacturing. It means many things are similar across models, makes diagnostics a lot easier. Everything's set up similarly. Versus having completely different architectures and completely different mindsets and way they build things, because my goodness, Mopar was never that easy.
No.
Mopar was never, no. Now that you've experienced some of the Mopars, I would imagine in the time frames since then, it's not the same.
I curse a lot of Mopars now. I see them and I'm like, nope. Give me a German.
I can't. Well, yes, because then you go to the work on the Germans, it's a completely different animal altogether.
Oh, but yeah.
One of the things I would describe going from either – whether you're going from domestic to European or you're going from import to European, I liken it going from Android to Apple. To
100%.
Me, the Germans, it feels very intuitive. Like it might be complicated. It doesn't matter what you're looking at. It might be complicated. But for some reason, it makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe the Volkswagens and the Audis, the BMWs and the Mercedes.
It's almost like they overcomplicate it so much to the point where it just makes sense. It's like you're just reading it and you're like, oh, what? Oh, I get it.
Exactly. So, question here. What is, since your start, and now that you've had, several years under your belt now, what is the most challenging repair that you've come across, diagnostic or repair?
That's a tough one, because I was working at a independent shop in Cochrane as well, where he works on a lot of customs, a lot of classics. Uh-huh. So I had an El Camino come in, like a low fuel pressure issue. And it's like, mm-hmm. that's not the same as diagnosing a low fuel pressure issue on a 2012 GMC, right? Totally mm-hmm. different. So it's like, yeah, I was doing a lot of kind of truck work at that shop and learned a lot about your fuel and how the diesels run, and was getting really good at that. And then you see an El Camino and it's like low fuel pressure. It's like, there's no computer. You know, there's nothing uh-huh. to tell you like where to start, where you should start your diagnostics. So yeah, honestly, like I would say just not so much like repairs, but going from such old cars to such new cars within the same day of work. And you're like, mm-hmm. your brain's like, was just working on a 69 and now you got to go to a 23. It's like, okay, hold on, switch gears, right? Like, I think that was where I found the most difficult, was to switch from that to that.
I can completely understand where that your head's at there, because a year and change ago, working on at a power sports store, when I would have the first thing in the morning, I rolled it in the night before. I really liked to have the motorcycles on my hoist the night before, so that when I came into work in the morning, they were nice, they were warm, everything was, and I just
ready to go
work. So the first thing in the morning, I had like a 1974 Honda CB750 on my hoist that I would read the carbs on, and that we're going to pull the carbs apart and put the carbs upstairs in the sonic cleaner. So I've got four carbs apart on my bench, and then taking them up and getting them into the sonic cleaner. And then, well, because it's a couple hours up there cleaning, whatever. And that's the only thing that we were doing on it. I pull in the next thing that I'm working on, and I'm doing a safety inspection on like a 2019 Ninja ZX6R.
Yeah.
Like we're not like a year old. We're not talking a model older. We're talking a completely different brand that happens to be 40 years newer.
Different generation. Yeah.
Like it's like when they say, okay, boomer, well, literally speaking, and they're both on my bench essentially at the same time. You know, I ended up having to take apart, don't quote me on it, I don't think it was a ZX6R, but it was something similar. It was a 63, whatever. But it was like that, where I have an LED assembly on my bench that I'm working on. So trying to figure out what's wrong with it, you know, just disconnected it and put it on my bench, and I'm testing out. And I've got an LED tail lamp on my bench, and I also have carb pieces from a 1974 Honda.
It's like totally different worlds.
Completely different worlds. Now, the cool thing is, if you think even architecturally, from the early 2000s to 2024, early 2000s, when I started in the trade, we were using a DRB3 at Chrysler to diagnose things. Like old school, you know, basically BIOS-based software program with a OBD plug-in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a couple – it looked like a video game. Yeah. Old school, like a gigantic Game Boy. Yeah. And now in when I left Chrysler in 2010, we had shifted out of the DRB and into a laptop and then into what was then called a Y-Tech. So it was literally like a portable network router that plugged into the car. And now you're diagnosing from a computer in another room.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that's in the span of not even 10 years. That's like, that was like an 8-year span.
Yeah. So there's one day, like, I'd have to literally go from working on like a 2000 Nissan Pathfinder, like diagnosing. Uh-huh. So using, that OBD3 or whatever. And we had all these different connections at the shop, and you had to find the right one to plug it into the scan tool to be able to use it. And it's like, okay. Yep. And then 2 hours later, go over to do like a OPI on a 2019 mm-hmm. Volkswagen from BC. So it's like, I can't do that to my brain that quick.
Yeah, I think these young guys are never going to really understand what the concept of getting a scan tool box and with a scan tool inside in, let's say, 2003, 2004. And in 2003, 2004, I remember my shop foreman opening up his Modus box. And anybody that knows what a Modus is will know what I'm talking about. There's literally four bags of connectors, adapters, and wires
to plugs.
Go to everything of the sun. And it's literally like, and the, if some of those folks will remember, there were keys in the DRV. So not that far. There was literally little keys. So we think it's funny looking at, you know, NVMe cards or whatever where we plug onto the motherboard. There were literally like keys like that to define what code was going from whatever scan tool you're using to the car.
Yeah.
It's like, plus the adapter.
Yeah.
It was a little bit crazy, a little bit overwhelming, but now it's just, it's, we'll call it simple because now there's like 160 to 200 modules on the car that we got to communicate with on a completely different communication
not
style.
Simple, but you have a more simple computer to read that computer with.
Yes. So crazy. Yeah. So what's, so between, between then and now, so you've been working at a Toyota, you've been working at a Nissan, you've been working at an independent. Mm-hmm. What thus far, like, would you say you have a favorite of the three, or is it just different, or what would you say your experiences are? Like, all of the above. Give us the down low.
Oh, that's hard. I don't think I'd have a favorite. Like, in my personal opinion, I really liked working at the independent shop. I just found it very more like family oriented. Like the guy that owned it, him and his wife started it, and it was open for 25 years. And his son mm-hmm. works there. His dad helped out. You know, like it was the customers that have been coming there for 25 years. Plus, mm-hmm. now you're seeing their kids and their kids' kids, right? So that was really cool, seeing like the trust that people had with this shop. In a dealership perspective, you can learn a lot and you can make a lot of money, obviously, because you're flat rate, but I don't see them looking at you in the same way as you would at an independent shop. You know, they're almost someone you're like, yeah, you make me a lot of money and, you know, you don't have any comebacks. Like, good job. You know, but at this shop, it's more so like, I'd walk in and my boss would be like, what'd you do this weekend? You know, like, how's your boyfriend? How's your mom and dad? Like, you know, he actually like really cares. And to me, like, that makes a huge difference in a workplace.
Uh-huh. It does. And it's interesting because leadership is always so important to me. Mm-hmm. I try to tell everybody the first rule of a mechanic is not to worry about where you work or what brand you work for, but definitely look for your high value leader first, somebody who cares about your well-being. And I don't necessarily mean it has to be super cuddly, personable, whatever, but somebody who is genuinely caring for your well-being, your success, not just today, but tomorrow and every day afterwards, and having that around you during your day really changes how well you do for not only for yourself but for the business.
Yes, exactly. So, like I always found I would show up earlier at that independent shop than I would at the dealership because I knew that he was going to be there because he was there at 7 every day. And you know, I'd come in at 7:30 and start helping the girls up front with things, you know, if they needed some cars pulled around, then I'll go grab them or whatever, right? And like, he would see that and he would literally come to you and be like, you have no idea how much that means to me. You know, like that helps him out way more. And at a dealership, it's like, they kind of just expect you to do that. You know, it's like, go help out front if you're not busy in the back or whatever, right? And yeah, I just found like, he really appreciates what you do. And then therefore you want to work hard and do the best that you can for him.
I think from that standpoint, again, it comes back to leadership, not necessarily the dealership.
Yeah.
Leadership, I've experienced both feeling like a number as well as feeling like I'm cared for and desired, that my presence is wanted and my expertise is needed
definitely depends on value. who you're answering to every day.
100%. So to that end, I don't necessarily believe that the dealership or the independent is going to be better for one or the other. It just really comes down to the individual in the leadership role.
Yeah, 100%.
awesome. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. So that comes to me to our question here, Madison. What would be your one piece of advice for a mechanic out there to be happier, healthier, more productive? And the cool thing is, because you are the third female mechanic on here, you might have a completely different outlook than the rest.
Yeah, I'm really curious actually what they said about this. You know, like, I'm not going to say, like, obviously you can't see me, I'm sitting down, but I'm 5'4", 108 pounds. So, you know, when people see me, they're not going to be like, oh, you can for sure lift a transmission, you know, like, but I found like, you just have to tell yourself that you can do it. You know, it doesn't matter how hard the job is or what job you're getting. Like, to me, every day I was scared shitless of what job I was going to get. Cause is it going to break my back or am I going to be sitting in a car using diagnostics? You know, like for guys, they don't think about that. They're like, give me a job. Don't care. I'll go do it. But I'm kind of like, you know, is this job going to make me sore for the rest of the week? Or, you know, am I going to be sweating my ass off doing this? You know, but either way, like I'd be walking to get the job and it's like, it doesn't matter you're 108 pounds and your arms are sticks. You can still do this. You know, it's not about, you have to tell yourself you can do it, you know? And to me, I found like at the independent shop, there was a lot of times when the guys would get so stressed out at themselves. You know, they're, oh, I lost this bolt, and they're looking for half an hour and they're just losing their mind. And it's like, you know what? Like, but you just put a whole freaking engine back together, dude. Like, you got to step back and look at what you're doing and see it's not easy. And we do it every day. You know, like to me, people don't really realize like what we do is hard. We're car doctors. We're car surgeons, you know, like it's just as stressful. And for us to be doing it every day and coming to work every day and you know what, we're here, we're doing it. Like, I would say you just have to have more faith in yourself.
100%. That faith is going to be my full back piece when I eventually get it, because faith is one of those things, like faith in yourself, faith and belief that you can do something is so very important. And I think I understand from a pure, now because I don't understand literally because I've not experienced it, but I can understand how being physically small, 5'4", 100 pounds, you are 8 inches shorter than I am and half my body weight.
Hey, you want to share some of that?
Conceptually, I've never thought that I couldn't do something physically because of my size. That's just not something I've ever had to cope with ever.
Right.
I'm fortunate enough that I am like the perfect size for almost every car on the planet. I fit in it and I usually don't have to move the seat. Everything is exactly to my hand, to my body proportions in every possible. I don't think I've ever. I'm average size in almost every possible human conceivable way, which means I just fit.
Yeah.
So that said, I've never gotten as like, am I going to be able to put the clutch in?
Yeah.
Am I too short to put the clutch in? That's never something that's entered my mind. Am I going to be able to lift this thing? Has never entered, like, just because it's either I'm going to lift it or I need the engine crane.
Right.
Basically, that's it.
Yeah. And I never, I usually, before I even get a job, I'm like, what tools are free that I can use? You know, what jacks are free? What cranes are free? You know, before I even like pick a job, I have to see, like, because I'm not going to be going and bugging the guy next to me like, hey, help me, you know, like they're doing their own stuff, you know, and you're not an apprentice anymore. You got to do it on your own. You know, you can't be a baby your whole life. You got to step it up and figure it out, but it's always work smarter, not harder.
Well, I always caveat because I literally tattooed it on myself. Yes. You got to work hard before you can work smart, because you got to learn you got to make all the mistakes to learn what the right path is so you can work smart.
100%.
Some of us just take a whole lot longer to figure it out.
Yeah, I had to learn real quick because otherwise I'm not doing my job. So, fair. But I always found like, actually, Richard taught me this. There's always a way, there's always an easier way to do it than you think. Right. So, he, like, if I was struggling with something, he would come over and he'd be like, why are you taking so long for this? And I'm like, I can't figure out how to get it off, you know? And he would just take a step back and he'd be like, how many ways can you think of to get it off? You know? Okay. Well, you just found out 5 ways. How many ways have you tried? 2, 3. Okay. Go try the other ways. You know, like it's always a good to have a different perspective on something as well. If you're struggling.
Mm-hmm. Richard Mueller is very good at that. The being able to either visualize or talk through a series of problems and be able to come up with all of the different ways that you can solve it and figuring out which one is the best way to solve it and then getting it done in an expeditious manner. He's very good at that. So
he always just seems to know, like, okay, I have 5 ways to do this. What way is the best? You know, what can I do right now? Like, mm-hmm. he's just very efficient with that. And he definitely taught me that way. Like, instead of standing there struggling with this, trying to reef on this bolt or whatever you're trying to get off, like, take a step back. What else can I do? You know, like, stop wasting time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good piece of advice. Very good piece of advice. Thank you for sharing that. I really do. Listen, I think that's a great portion to end there. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So folks, I think we're going to pop off right there, because I think there's a lot more nuggets in there than I can think. between some of the stories, between some of the experiences, I think that's a great way to end. That the fact that you've spent the time going through COVID, you've gotten your license through all of that, you've had time both independent and dealer, you've got a bit of experience and what this, that, whatever the case may be, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the fact
honestly.
That you've been able to accomplish that through the last 5 years is awesome. And I'm really thankful and really proud that you were able to do that.
Thank you. Yeah. Honestly, though, like, as much as it is me working hard and being hard on myself, like, I had some unreal people working above me. Like, there was so many times where I'm just like, I can't do this. You know, I'm giving up. That's enough for me. And, you know, and then Richard or my foreman, Steve, like, you know, you have to really appreciate those people because you don't get them very often. So I would, one other piece of advice for your techs, don't mm-hmm. take them for granted. You know, like, every day when you walk out, you shake your foreman's hand. If they helped you, like, I really appreciate what you did for me today, because that will go miles, you know, like, just makes such a difference, you know, treating each other with respect and appreciating what each other do, for sure.
100%. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of left me speechless there. I don't know what to follow up that with.
I know, like, honestly, a lot of, When I left my independent shop, I'm not there anymore. I'm at a customs shop now. But when I left there, one of the things he asked me is, like, is there something that we could have done differently? And I said, no, like, you guys showed me appreciation for everything I did. And if I screwed up, you know, it wasn't getting mad. It was talking to me with respect. And I said, like, I didn't have that for the whole 4 years of my career before this. I said, it makes such a difference to come to work and actually be appreciative and then appreciate them back, you know?
Mm-hmm. That it was I've probably heard it before, but the fact that my current boss says it all of the time, it's the attitude of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Hill is amazing for that, and he really instills how much appreciation and how far appreciation can take you. So being able to have that reciprocity between leadership and yourself is really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Well, folks, I think that's the end of today's episode. But don't worry, folks. We don't have to go, oh, noes, because we'll have another one coming next week. I've already got them booked. It's already locked and loaded, so we're good to go that way. Folks, don't forget that Wrench Turners has merch. The link will be in the little description below. And remember that my mother says it's awesome, so you should buy it.
Mom's always right.
Mom's always right. Wrenches to Wrenches newsletter continues to come out bi-weekly. I am now digging from the archives, so every once in a while you're going to see stuff that I wrote about like a year and a half, 2 years ago is now going to be populated out in the wild again for y'all to read. It's really interesting to see some of that writing. Some of it, I have not edited any of it. It's literally just reposting it, so I get to see my own mistakes. So y'all get to see it too. And to end, as we always do, with a quote. Remember that tomorrow, the best preparation for tomorrow is the hard work you do today. folks, remember that negative pushes, positive pulls, and always clean your toys before you put them away.